Today's topic is Bishul Akum. Bishul Akum is actually a very common question. Many people have employees who work in their house, maids, babysitters, and the like, and questions of Bishul Akum arise. Another application which is common, though less relevant for us, is in a commercial setting. Restaurants, hotels, companies, and so on and so forth. Obviously, for today's shiur, we're going to focus more on residential issues of Bishul Akum as opposed to commercial issues, but we'll consider them both as well. So, what is the basis for the issur of Bishul Akum? Obviously, when we're talking about Bishul Akum, we're dealing with a situation where there is no practical concern of kashrus. The ingredients are all kosher, the pots and pans are all kosher. So what is the reason for the prohibition of Bishul Akum? Anyone know? Yeah? Yes, chasnus, intermarriage. There are actually a number of gzeros, as you noted, that are made because of the concern for chasnus. Among them, Bishul Akum, Pas Akum, Shechar Akum. Pas Akum, most of us are not makbid about, except for maybe during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. And that's because, according to a number of Rishonim, and this is the Psak of the Ramah, one is able to be lenient on pas palter. Pas palter means bakery bread. Meaning to say, pas akum is usher if it's pas balabayas. If your next door neighbor who happens to be non-Jewish bakes you a loaf of bread, even if you know that the ingredients and the pots and the pans are kosher, let's say you even watched, but you didn't participate, so that bread would be usher because of pas akum. We are makel for pas palter. We, meaning Ashkenazim, are makel for pas palter for bakery bread. Sfardim, and even Ashkenazim, according to the Shach, should be machmir if you could get pas Yisrael, if pas Yisrael is available. If Pas Yisrael is unavailable, then even Sfardim and Ashkenazim could be mako. Moreover, there is a stringency that during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva we're makbid on Pas Yisrael. Now, I'll just mention this briefly, and then we'll focus though on Bishul Yisrael because that is more common. Why is it that of all things we're machmir about Pas Yisrael during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva? So one possibility, and in fact there are some poskim that say this, is that during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva we take on chumras, and this is a chumrah. However, it's a strange idea. There are lots of chumras that we could take. Maybe we should take on the chumrah of chadash and being makbid on chalav Yisrael and not being somech on Rav Moshe's kula for stam chalav, and maybe no one should wear sheitlach, because many poskim say that that's inappropriate. And, you know, we could pick many, many different chumras. It's strange that we would pick this one. So here, too, there are a couple of approaches. But one approach, I think, that emerges from the Ramban is that this is not like all those other examples. All those other examples are things that are either absolutely usher for the rest of the year or they're mutter. Meaning to say, if you think that stam chalav is chalav akum, so it's usher the rest of the year. If you think Rav Moshe is right, so then it's chalav Yisrael the rest of the year. It's either mutter or usher. It's not, there's no idea of chumrah. Likewise, when it comes to chadash, so either it's usher, or you think it's mutter, whether it's because of rov or sfeik or the like. But it's not a issue where it's mutter, but there's a midas chasidus of sorts to be machmir. When it comes to chadash, I mean, when it comes to pas Yisrael, according to the Ramban, this is something that, technically speaking, might be mutter, but it's something about which chaverim, people that are more punctilious, are machmir about. This was something that was once prohibited. In May, the ban might have been quasi-lifted or never really took root in the first place. There's still an idea of being machmir. And therefore, over here, we're saying, even though for the 10-day, you know, for the rest of the year, we're going to be makel because either the ban was rescinded or was never fully in effect, However, we're going to follow the minhag of chaverim. We're going to act like chaverim for 10 days a year, as opposed to the other cases, which are either mutter or asr. If you think it's mutter, then there's no reason not to be makel during the 10 days of tshuva. If you think it's asr, so you should be machmir the rest of the year. Okay, so that's the idea of, again, there's a lot to talk about in terms of Pas Yisrael and what it is and what counts, but we're going to, since it's only 10 days a year, we'll leave those halachos aside, and we will focus on Bishalakam. Now, the first thing to note, as you said correctly, that the basis is because of chasnas, the concern for marriage. One of the things that you'll see is that there are many gzeros that relate to intermarriage, and not just gzeros, but gzeros l'gzeros, and gzeros l'gzeros l'gzeros. And as we've discussed before, generally speaking, we don't allow for such things. You could make a siyag, a gzera against violating the Torah law, but not a gzera on top of a gzera. You should make a mishmeres l'mishmarti, the pasuk says, but not mishmeres l'mishmeres. So why is this different? I'll read you an interesting lashon from the Tosfos HaRash. He writes, Ra'isiu v'inosi b'gzeres chachamim v'takanosam, v'hine hosifu geder al geder, v'siyag al siyag, lasos mishmeres l'mishmeres, l'man lo nis'arev bagayim. We find gzeira on top of gzeira on top of gzeira to prevent intermarriage. And he elaborates. So why do you think that is? Why is it that we have so many stringencies when it comes to the concern for chasnas?
I know that one of the places that we do allow gzeira on gzeira is the Vodazara, so maybe up here the chasnas would be covered.
Okay, so it actually happens to be correct. It's actually interesting. You're mechavenes to the Gemara. The Gemara says that bishul or tzpas, things like this, is aser because of chasnas. And the Gemara says chasnas is aser mishum davar acher. Davar acher referring to avodah zarah. In other words, chasnas per se is so bad because it's going to lead to avodah zarah. And that's part of why it's so machmir. So like you said, another aspect, I believe, is that the problem of intermarriage is not so much the avera per se. The truth of the matter is, as an avera, it's not even the worst avera in the world. The problem is that it leads to a harisas hadas. If we don't preserve the Jewish family, so then the whole religion will crumble. In other words, it's not just fundamentally the isser. I'll give you an interesting mashal. Somebody once asked Rabbi Yaakov the following question. He said, you know, maybe we shouldn't discourage intermarriage, because among the people who are likely to intermarry, so most likely those people wouldn't keep Taras HaMishpacha even if they married a Jew. So now, if they're going ahead and getting married to a Jew but not keeping Taras HaMishpacha, so that's an Isser Kares, very big Chomer Aveira. Marrying a non-Jew, it's not so clear what the Avera is. Is it Dereis or is it Rabbanan? It's certainly not an Isser Kares, maybe Kanaim Pogimbo, but fundamentally, it's less severe, well, if it's Befarhesia. So it's less severe than intermarriage. So this person, it's actually a posek, said, why are we so discouraging of intermarriage? So the answer, as you, I surmise you're all guessing from your smirks, is that we understand that the problem with intermarriage really goes well beyond the formal prohibition. And that's the reason why we have so many chumras, and that's the reason why it's so tragic. And this is important to stress nowadays, because sadly, it used to be, 30, 40 years ago, even among those who weren't religious, that the idea of marrying out was considered a horrifying, horrible idea. Even among people that didn't keep Shabbos and didn't keep kashrus and other things. I'll tell you, my aunt is not married to a Jew. When my grandparents, who were totally unobservant, didn't go to the wedding, it was a tragedy. Nowadays, sadly, that's been lost. It's even mutter, according to some denominations. other denominations are ambiguous or ambivalent and trying to figure out what exactly they hold, but it doesn't really matter because everyone's doing it. And that's natural when, once you get rid of halacha, and you don't really believe in the system, what's to stop you from marrying the person that you're in love with? If you think the whole thing is a club, so be that as it may, the concern, sadly, is very much a real concern. And it was always that way. As long as we're in Galus, that's going to be our primary concern. But I'd like to add a point that comes out from the Meiri, as well as the Rambam and the Pirshei Mishnayos, which is, it's not just intermarriage. It relates to generally coming too close and losing the borders, the separations that we have with our neighbors. It's not intermarriage per se. Intermarriage might be the worst manifestation of that general concern. But whenever you live in a society and your neighbors aren't Jewish and your co-workers aren't Jewish and the like, so there's a concern that boundaries will be lost and the degree of separation that the Torah wishes that we have will be lost. Heim am levadad yishkon uvagoyim lo yischashav. And these restrictions support that. Of course, you have to go to work, and in work, so naturally, you have to work with other people. But when it comes to social aspects, so that's where Chazal added a lot of restrictions. So that's where Bishalakum comes from. They say the man, you know, the path to a man's heart is through his stomach. What do they say, right? So Bishul Akum, you know, when you go on a date, so you go out to a restaurant. And likewise, Pas, Alalechem, right? Lo Alalechem Levado Yechya Adam. Levad, but it's the primary, at least traditionally, it was always the primary food. And certainly things like Sheikhar Akum, the idea that you can't go to a bar or restaurant and drink with a non-Jew, according to some poskim. Probably won't get to this today, but it even would apply in a coffee house because that's the social drink. So it's in the social aspects that Chazal made the most restrictions, because that's where things can fall apart. If you work together, but socially you remain separate, or when you do have to socialize, there are these boundaries built in by the halacha, so then hopefully the proper demarcations will be maintained. But without these proper demarcations, so then the borders could be crossed. And that's why we find so many Isurim here. Now there's an interesting question, which is based off of what you suggested before, that the Gemara notes that ultimately even Chasnas is Atu Avodah Zarah, so maybe you would wonder, well, should this apply for Muslims? After all, Muslims aren't Oved Avodah Zarah. So, we paskin it does apply for Muslims, and the reason is that even if the ultimate concern, the absolute worst manifestation is Avodah Zarah, but still they formulated the Isser Misham Chasnas, and obviously there's an Isser to intermarry non-Jews, even if they happen to be monotheists. So what about the opposite question? What about if you have a Jew who's a Mummer? In that case, what would you say? Would you say that they're Jewish, and therefore formally there's no concern of intermarriage? Or would you say no? Since the ultimate concern is that whether it's Avodah Zarah or Kfira or the like will rabba off on us, so therefore even a Yisrael Mummer this should apply. So this is actually a machlokas in the poskim. There are some poskim who are machmir, but the pashtus is, and this is the psak of Rav Moshe, that we could be mekel on Yisrael Mummer, and that's because since the takana was formulated as a iser mishum chasnus, and there is no iser chasnus, then the iser of bishul akum does not apply. So therefore, just like we're machmir for Muslims, we could be mako for a mummer. So this actually does come up. When somebody who isn't religious, not every irreligious Jew would we classify as a mummer anyway, but even if we did, if someone who isn't religious cooks something and you know that it's kosher, so one need not be concerned, according to most poskim, for the iser of bishul akum. Yes? So that's a good question. So to put the question a little bit more forcefully or precisely, is this a low plug or not? Do we say that the iser only applies when there's a practical concern? Or no, the motivation was chasnus, but they made the iser across the board. So the one version of this question that was asked to the Rashba is, what about if you have monks who cook, or in this case, this question was actually about bread, there's a monk bakery, so they have to be celibate, and therefore there's no concern of chasnas. So maybe we should be able to go to the monastery and buy bread. And that's essentially another version of your question. So the Rashba says it's usher. This was a low plug. Even if you have a situation where the particular concern isn't relevant, nevertheless, they said all food cooked by a non-Jew that meets the criteria for bishul akum, we haven't yet defined those criteria, whatever those criteria are, all food cooked by non-Jews that meets that criteria is included in the prohibition. And therefore, monks or other situations where the concern doesn't exist are still prohibited. Now, an interesting application of that is going to be factories. What about nowadays? Let's say you go ahead and you buy some food, and this food was made in the factory. So, in that case, there's no issue of chasnas, because, first of all, this was made 1,000 miles away from me. And I don't know who made it, and I don't know how to find them. I don't know if they're Jewish. I don't know if it was anything. So there's no practical concern. When you go ahead and you eat this can of tomato sauce, it's going to happen to be that tomato sauce isn't going to be part of bishul akum for a different reason. But leaving that aside, right, I'm not going to go intermarry anybody just because I ate a can of Kraft tomato sauce. So on the other hand, since we just said it's a low plug, so then maybe it should still be aser. So rov poskim, and this is the halacha l'maisa, are machmir. And that's because, like we said, it's a low plug. Rav Moshe is reported to have said that one could be lenient. Didn't we just say it's a low plug? So he argued, if it's correct, it's not entirely clear if Rav Moshe said this. In one place, Rav Moshe says you shouldn't rely on this. But he said, if he was lenient, that when A, there's no concern practically, and B, the food is produced in a way that totally does not resemble home-style cooking, so then maybe it wasn't bechlal the gzeira. It is a low plug anytime it's cooked in a normal way. But since the process of making this food is so different, so maybe it doesn't apply. Now, we don't accept that svara on its own, but we'll sometimes throw that in as a sniff lahaka. Okay, it's a good question. I'm going to give you a short answer now. Some Rishonim, based off of Yerushalmi, say that they rescinded the Gzeira on Pas because it was too hard to observe, because bread was the primary food and people were not able to get Pas Yisrael. Or a similar version is, because of that difficulty, perhaps the Gzeira never took on in the first place, never took root. Okay. So we've until now been assuming that the Isser is based off of Chasnus, and that is the primary reason. It's interesting, Rashi says that reason on the Mishnah, but in the Gemara he adds an additional reason, which is that there's a concern Shagazru Chachamim al Ashlakos, Kidei Shelo Ye Yisrael Ragil Etzlo B'machal Uvimishta V'Yachilenu Davar Tameh. If you're used to eating with non-Jews, so the first couple times you might be sure that there's no non-kosher ingredients, but you get used to it too much and the ingredients might once actually be unkosher. Now the question is, where did Rashi get this from? Especially because Rashi and the Mishnah mentioned chasnas. And are we choshish for it? So there are a number of Rishonim and Achronim who say one should be concerned with this as well. And moreover, they actually changed the formulation from what Rashi said, and they said part of the reason for the Isser is Gzeira Shema Yachilanu Davar Tameh, lest they mix in some type of non-kosher ingredient into this food. It could be that they see it as two reasons, or I think within Rashi, more likely the motivation was chasnas, but the gedera takana was perhaps chshash and machalos asuros. Why they would have done that is a different reason, but you should know that there might be an additional concern as well, but the primary concern, as we've stated, is because of chasnas. Okay, so now what are some of the kulas for Bishalakum? There are a lot of kulas. We'll mention four of them. Number one, the most important one, is Davar She'eno Ola al Shulchan Malachim. Something that's not fit for a king's table. If this food is the type of food that would never be served on a king's table, then it is not included in the prohibition. Why is this? So the simplest reason is what the Rambam says, and other Rishonim say it slightly differently, that the concern, the greatest concern, is in a social setting where we're concerned that the non-Jew will invite you to his house, have you join him for a meal. Generally speaking, when you have guests, you invite someone, you serve a fancy meal. If you had invited guests, you wouldn't just serve, Wacky Max or certain types of foods that are not, we're going to give many examples in a moment, that aren't fit for a king's table. You'll give nice food, whether it's high quality food and the like. And therefore, things that are not fit for a king's table are not part of the Isser. Now, we could actually understand this in two ways. The Chazon Ish, give you a story first. When King Edward of England came to America, so of course they prepared a lavish breakfast for him, and he said, "I just want to eat sardines for breakfast." So it was in the headlines of the paper. So some people said, "Ah, look at this. Sardines are ra'ui lalos al shulchan malachim." And indeed, this seems to be the view of the Chazon Ish. This is reported in his name. Anything that a king would eat at his table is asur. It's considered nechal al shulchan malachim. Now, if you take this view, then it would be very restrictive, because what does, I don't know, the Queen of England eat for breakfast? So I don't know if she eats sardines, but maybe she eats cornflakes, right? You know the cornflakes that they make in England, you get them in Eretz Yisrael, they have like the Queen's seal on them. No, you never seen that? Just the Kellogg's ones. I'm sure you only ate the Telma ones. Okay. The Kellogg's cornflakes sold in Israel have the Queen's seal, right? Let's say Barack Obama eats Cheerios for breakfast. So now perhaps Cheerios are aser because they're all al shulchan malachim. So most poskim do not accept that. Most poskim say no. Since the reason is something that you would serve to a mechubadik, a guest, so it means basically what would be served by the king at a state dinner. If this would be served at a state dinner, So perhaps we don't always know what would be served at a state dinner. So maybe we would say what they would serve at a chasana or something like that. So that's roi lalos al shulchan malachim. All sorts of foods would never be served at a state dinner. And therefore, sardines and the like would not be included. In fact, there's an article by Rabbi Heinemann of the Star K, and he said that they had certain sfeikos about certain types of foods, so they called up the White House chef, and they asked, would you serve this? Let's say, canned food. So the White House chef said, no, you know, we would make whatever people want, but we've never served anything from a can at a White House dinner. It's always fresh food, freshly prepared. So let's take an example. Canned string beans. Do you need canned string beans? Does that need to be Bishul Yisrael? Let's say, for example, you determined, which might very well be the case, I'm not sure, that canned string beans, there's no kashrus concerned, right? But canned string beans are basically cooked string beans. They're cooked in a can, but they're cooked string beans. So maybe it's a type A ingredient in the sense that there's no ingredients, so there's no hechsher, chidina hechsher. So let's assume you don't. Again, I'm not sure. But there are many type of canned vegetables or frozen vegetables that don't need a hechsher because there's no practical concern that there'd be any unkosher ingredient. But one second, if they're canned string beans, they were cooked. Presumably they were cooked by Nachrim. So maybe it should be asamishim bishalakam. So, according to Rabbi Heinemann, you don't have to be concerned. Why? Because they would never serve canned string beans at a state dinner. And therefore, even though you might say, well, these are basically cooked string beans, they would serve at a state dinner. It's true. But these are cooked in a way that this product would never be served. Now, that's assuming that even when they're immediately canned, they still wouldn't taste like regular fresh string beans. They would look different, they would taste different, therefore they would never be served. It happens to be that there might be another tzad l'hakel for cans because they happen to be cooked using ketor, but we'll get to that later. Yes?
So, you kind of
okay, so that's a very important question. So we at Paskin, that Bishul Akum does not depend on the min, it depends on the way it's prepared. Let me give you an example. Potato chips. Potato chips. So are potatoes served at a state dinner? Absolutely. Are fried potatoes served at a state dinner? Quite possibly. Not your regular old French fries, but they might have, you know, French fries that are cut in a fancier way. Basically, right? So, except at your wedding, they don't usually serve potato chips at fancy. They stuck a potato chip in the top of the thing. So, anyway, yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about whether one person doing something silly can like redefine. Okay, but it's just a potato chip.
But it's not. I'm saying even that is a difference.
So you're saying
green beans versus canned
beans. Okay, maybe.
It's not like greasy, fast.
Fine, good. It's a fair point. We have to figure out. So one of the questions is, how subtle of a difference would we accept? So we'll get to that question in a moment. But let's take the example for a moment of potato chips. So potato chips, they would not serve at a state dinner. But fried potatoes, they might. Well, is there a difference between fried potatoes and potato chips? So, this seems to actually be a dispute among the Rishonim. There does seem to be a view in Rishonim, the Isser V'Heter, who seems to assume that if this type of food is sometimes served at a state dinner, so then all food of that variety would be asur because of Bishul Akum, in which case potato chips would be asur. And interestingly enough, there is a tshuva where Moshe seems to be machmir about potato chips. However, the accepted halacha, the view of most poskim, is we don't look at the min. We look at the particular food in the way in which it's prepared. So, potato chips would not be served at a state dinner. Even French fries wouldn't be served at a state dinner. The fact that other types of potatoes would be served is irrelevant. So, to give you an example, this somebody asked me recently, they had a babysitter, and their babysitter cooked noodles for their child. So, the question is, A, were those noodles mutter usser? But that actually wasn't the question. They were no longer around. They wanted to know if they had to kosher their pot. So we'll talk about koshering if there are mess-ups that happen later. Simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch, if something is usher mishum bishalakum, you do have to kosher it. When done by a non-Jewish employee, there might be an additional tzad l'haka, which we'll get to when we get to that question. But one way or the other, I said, what type of noodles? Because some noodles are served in fancy dinners. You go to weddings, and sometimes they'll have spaghetti for an appetizer, or at the shmorg they'll have those noodle-making stations or the like, right? You will sometimes see pasta. But I asked him what type of pasta. He said, elbow macaroni. So I think that elbow macaroni is not something that they would ever serve at a state dinner. Now, there are some poskim, mentioned Torah, Rav Belsky, Zichron Levracha, was nifter just recently, a couple days ago. So Rav Belsky was hesitant to rely on that leniency. He thought that these are so close to each other, maybe we can't be makel. He thought you could only be makel on that Bishas Adchak. But I'm not so sure. I think a number of poskim have argued that no, that elbow macaroni is a different type of min than spaghetti or other shapes. And even though other shapes would be usher because of bishul akum, elbow macaroni probably would not be. And therefore, I didn't think that he had to kosher his pot. So therefore, as I said, the halacha l'maisa, we always look at the way in which it's prepared. Now, what about if this food prepared this type of food you would serve, but it didn't come out as good as, you know, nice enough that they would serve it as at a king's table? There, it's already hard to be mako. In other words, if this type of food, this min prepared in this way, right, would be served, but the way in which I made it isn't really so elegant or the like, so then I think we would be machmir, because that's already too close. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's a hard call. There was a whole discussion about donuts, because they started serving donuts at Viennese table, but they were smaller donuts and not like the bigger donuts. Donuts would otherwise be a problem because of bishul akum, at least likely, because they're actually not baked. They're not bechlal pasakum. They're cooked because they're deep fried. But the ones that they serve at weddings were smaller, and these are bigger. Does the size really matter? It's hard to argue. There are a lot of factors, sadim lakan ulakan. Maybe the fact that they had to shrink the size, because otherwise people will say, why are you serving this as at a thing? Maybe that should be a reason why it should be mutter. As I said, one crazy person who decides to do that, you know, even if they were potato chips, okay, they weren't, you're saying, but even if they were, does one caterer who decides to put a potato chip and mashed potatoes make it usher for everybody else? You can make the argument no. Fundamentally, this is a type of food that's einu ol l'shulchan aruch. So a lot of these types of questions are tricky, but those are the basic rules. Okay. Now, the next kula that we want to deal with is something that's lo nishtane mibriyaso al yedei ha'or. What does that mean? This isn't as common as the first kula. We'll give some examples shortly. The Gemara says, chitin v'asan kalayos mutarin. That means wheat kernels that were made into kalayos. Kalayos are roasted or parched wheat kernels. Just like, you know, you could pop corn, so you could also roast wheat kernels, sort of like honey smacks without the honey. So they are mutter, meaning to say there's no concern for bishul akum. So the question is why? So Rashi says the reason is because they're lo nishtana al yedei ha'or. They basically look the same before they're cooked and after they're cooked. It's not like popcorn in that respect. And therefore anything that's lo nishtana al yedei ha'or is not bechlal bishul. The Rambam says it's mutter because ein adam mizamein es chaveru al klayos, basically meaning to say it's not olal shulchan malachim. It's not fancy enough. And the Rashba gives a third reason, as we'll talk about it in a moment. There's another kula, which is anything that's nechal kamoshu chai, anything that's edible raw, is okay. Now, the question for our purposes at present is, do we accept Rashi's leniency? Anything that is lo nishtana mibriyaso al yidei ha'or, is that mutter aser? So the Shach thinks that this is really the correct view, but since the Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to paskin that way, so generally speaking, we are machmir. And anything, even if it's lo nishtana mibriyaso al yidei ha'or, if it meets the other criteria, namely it's lo nechal chai, and also it's olal shulchan malachim, it would be aser. So we'll talk about some practical applications of that rule in just a moment. Let's just talk about the other kulas. The next kula is foods eaten raw. Nechal kamo shehein chai. Any food that's edible raw is not aser because of bishul akum, even if it happens to be cooked. And even if it's olal shulchan malachim. So let's take baked apples, or applesauce, or the like. Apples are edible raw. So if a non-Jew cooks apples into applesauce, or the like, it would not be aser, even if that's olal shulchan malachim. Why it's nechal kamo shuchai? What's the reason for this? Two reasons are given. One possibility is it's not really bishul, because you haven't brought the food from a state of inedibility to edibility. The second possibility is the non-Jew hasn't really done you so much of a favor, and therefore it won't lead to the type of kiruv hadas that we're concerned about with bishul akum. Again, we'll give. Now, the halacha is that if it's edible raw, but only nechal al yedei hadchak, you could eat it, but it's not very good. It's pretty bad. So that is insufficient. So certain types of... anyone think of an example? I'll give some. Potatoes. So potatoes, definitely. Even if they're edible, it's nechal yedei hadchak. What about onions also? So, right. So onions is a good question. Onions is actually a complex question because onions are edible raw with other things, like in a salad. So it is actually an interesting discussion among the poskim. Something's edible raw, but not on its own, only in conjunction with other things that sort of diffuse the taste, the strength of the taste. Is that considered nachal kamo shuchai or not? Okay, so great example. So fish. So there was about 20, 30 years ago, the Shevet Halevi Rav Osner was asked about fish. And the questioner said, well, some people eat it as sushi. So he answered, nah, just because there's some mishugayim that eat sushi, doesn't, for most people, raw fish is gross. So I think that ruling was correct at the time that it was issued, but is probably no longer true. Nowadays, eating sushi is so mainstream that I think sushi is definitely fish is nechal kamo shuchai. Now that's not going to help for all fish. Lots of fish are, you know, I don't know, do they make tilapia sushi? I don't think so, right? So therefore, if a non-Jew cooked tilapia, it would be aser. But if they cooked salmon, it would be mutter, because salmon is eaten raw in sushi. So, now, what about if it's not sushi grade? Depends really what that means, not sushi grade. If it really is, if it's...
Okay. You can have toothpaste that is not...
No. Right. In other words, so if it's basically just, you know, people would not turn it into sushi because it's a couple days old and they'd be afraid of food poisoning, but there's no concern if you cook it, so then... Since fundamentally it's really raw for sushi, you would just be concerned, probably you would still consider it nachal kemoshu chai. Probably. You could question that. But if fundamentally it's inedible raw, so then there would be an iser bishalakam. So anyway, the point is that if somebody has a non-Jewish employee, so asking them to cook salmon might be a good idea. Though, as I said, tilapia wouldn't be. But on the other hand, let's say you wanted to say, well, what about meat? Because if you go to La Marais, you could get beef tartare and all sorts of other wonderful raw meat. So I think that the vast majority of people would still see beef tartare and raw meat as gross, even though there are some people that do eat it. There's actually an interesting question also with respect to Hilchos Shabbos, whether it's going to be muksa or not. But anyhow, so I would still think that that is probably, you know, maybe in 20 years from now, somebody will listen to the shiur and say, what? This is what we do all the time. Who cooks their meat anymore? Only low-class people. But as things stand, I still think that meat is probably eino olo shulchan melach, and because most people will see it's gross. Now, what about, there are certain types of things that are tricky. Raw cranberries is a relevant question. This comes up with cranberry sauce. So there's actually a debate among poskim, and this is a more complex. Ray Belsky was makel. He said, because some people do make raw cranberries. There's types of relishes or the like that use raw cranberries. And raw cranberries, they're not fundamentally inedible raw. It's just that they're very bitter. So you need a way to sweeten them. But if you can figure out a way to sweeten them, then you could. So he thought that raw cranberries are considered nachal and kamo shu chai. Others, like Rosh Hechter, at least initially thought, give me a break. Like, whoever heard of eating a raw cranberry, that's a miuta de miuta. Not clear. Somebody just told me over Shabbos that their grandmother makes two types of recipes with raw cranberries, so maybe it's not as unlikely. Shechter had a different kula, which is a very big chiddush. Yeah?
So it doesn't depend what you personally do, but what goat does?
So, generally speaking, if this is a food that most people would eat raw, you personally don't like it raw, so then I think there's room for leniency. Yeah. Okay. All right. I guess we're not going to finish this today. So we'll stop here. But we will finish it tomorrow. Not tomorrow, Bezus Hashem, next Monday. And we'll probably do one of the other topics, at least start. Maybe we'll do vitamins, because that won't take all year. So next week we'll finish Bishalakum, and we will talk about kashrus concerns with respect to vitamins and medicines. Bezus Hashem. Okay, have a good night.